Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the 90 Day Fiancé Wrap Up Podcast. We're here today to talk about 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way, Season 4, Episode 14, aka the penultimate episode, aka the one right before the finale slash part one of the tell-all. As of right now, it looks like it's going to be two parts of the tell-all, but could be three. Don't quote me on that. And we have news. June 4th will be the brand new season of 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 days, which, if you don't know this about me, is my favorite franchise of the 90 day series. Although I will say they're bringing back all new couples, which is always great, plus a returning couple in Gino and Jasmine. So everyone collectively, let's take a second, say yikes together. Perfect. We can move on. And of course, if you heard that laugh right there, my guest this week is someone who is not unfamiliar with the 90 Day Fiancé franchise, a guest of the show always. Always appreciate her presence here. She is one half of the Wrestling Wrap Up, one half of the Crime Scene Podcast. It is the one and only Mari Forth here. Mari, how are you doing?
I am so good. I am here. My ticket is in hand. We're close to the end of our journey on the Hot Mess Express. And I'm so glad I can be back here with you, Puya, to talk about a very decent season of 90 Day Fiancé. I think it's been a good season. It feels like a lot of stretching, but I was thoroughly entertained throughout.
I agree. I feel like typically with 90 Day, we get tired. It gets tiresome. And it's honestly, a lot of it happens when it's returnee couples who we've seen the same story play out three different ways, but the same way on every season. So to have a brand new cast was good. I think there was a good amount of drama, not a lot of filler. We had a couple filler episodes, but through 14, I say most of them were bangers. And I think they're finishing it at the right time. I feel like if this had gone six more weeks, it would have been a lot, but thankfully that's not the case.
Yeah, I completely agree. I definitely think that they did a good job of having enough couples to fill the content, because it felt like some of these stories were really jam-packed and it seemed like some of these stories were light. So they were able to do a really good management. Like, they really managed, using wrestling terms here, they really managed the card well by having some people take bye weeks and then, you know, skipping, you know, and coming back. Like, I think they did a really good job of having enough content, even though you could still feel that they were a little light on it. I don't think they missed a beat.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Yeah, I'm very pleased with how things are going. And we got a couple stories that kind of finished up here today, and then a couple that are left for the finale next week, obviously, and a couple that was just not featured. So,
yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong before we dive in. Did you get a next time on your broadcast or no?
I did not. I watched. Yeah, okay. So I watched it on Discovery Plus and I was like, okay, maybe Discovery Plus just didn't have the next time on. So I like scoured the internet for it and I could not find it. So I was like, okay, I'll just ask Puya. So I'm glad.
Yeah. I did the same. I watched it on Disco Plus as well. And I do think I'm going to go ahead and get on a limb here and assume we don't have a next time on, which if we don't, I'm a little confused, because are we just not going to see Nicole and Mahmoud again? I'm not complaining. Just let it be on record. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I as I was doing my digging, I did see somebody say, oh, they found a leaked version of the tell-all preview. But I didn't watch that because I'm like, I don't know how that doesn't really pertain to what I'm doing right now. So I don't know. I don't think there's no way we're done with Nicole and Mahmoud. Like, they have to be on next week's episode, the final episode. There's no way.
I have to imagine they're going to be on next week's episode as well. But I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get to next week. But for now, let's head on over to Morocco and talk about Debbie Onosama, whose storyline, one of the few storylines here that does get closed in this very episode. And initially, the episode starts with Osama going to meet up with his sister to kind of talk through what happened with Debbie. Obviously, him and Debbie had a bit of an argument because Osama mentioned, hey, our plan is you bring me to the U.S. I become the poet, the artist that I know I am, and I'll make a life for myself there. And you will also do the same, and we'll get our own studio. And meanwhile, Debbie's like, dude, I moved here for you. We're living here. So a little bit of confusion in the mix for these two. But I really felt like Osama's sister pointed out some things that, you know, give us a little bit more insight to how Osama behaves. Because the one line that stood out to me, Mari, was that she mentioned Osama can be mean to people he loves. And I was like, all right, this is someone who, gets angry, he says whatever that comes out of his mouth, and everyone's kind of accepted it, which should never be the case.
Right, exactly. And it was kind of funny to me when he was talking about what happened with their fight last night. He was like, yeah, I got into a fight with Debbie because she doesn't like that I'm using her for a visa. I was like, wait, what? He legit said that. I was like, you said that out loud, sir. But I thought it was very interesting that he told his sister about the part about calling Debbie crazy, but again, wasn't really telling her about the whole visa part. And this was the part where he was saying that, you know, it was my understanding that she always knew we were going back to the U.S. So, and he clearly told all of his friends, all of his family, like, we are going back to the U.S., like you've been covering and saying previously. So he's telling her and she's like, oh, it must have been a misunderstanding. This is the at this point, I'm like, no, I think he lied. Like, to me, I'm like, I'm thinking he's truly lying, because that is a huge misunderstanding. And from what we understand, from Debbie's point of view, from what we've gotten from Debbie's point of view, it was always that she was coming to Morocco. And that he said, oh, he didn't want to tell her because he wasn't sure she was going to come. So at this point, I'm like, this is a lie, right?
That's how I feel. I feel like you lied or you withheld. Well, you know, if you want to get technical, because sometimes people will try and convince themselves they didn't lie. You withheld information that Debbie would have really liked to have before moving. And that information was, your move here is temporary. You led her to believe that she's moving here permanently so that she would get FaceTime with her. And you figured, we schmooze. I put on the charm and I'm like, Debbie, look at us. Look how happy we are. Which, again, I do think he does care for her. I don't think this was a complete one-for-one scam. Mm-hmm. But there was definitely a heavy ulterior motive here. And that was, we go to the U.S. Because it sounds to me, with everything Osama's saying, he would like to pursue a career in the arts, in the, you know, being an artist. And he believes that that is not going to be business or bread to have in Morocco. So
newsflash, it's not going to happen much over here either. Like, we don't.
Yeah, I don't know what he thinks is happening
over here either. So I don't know what he thinks. He's going to come over here and be a, I think even famous poets, I feel like, don't get paid that much, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not very much in the poetry business.
Right.
But I would have to assume that, you know, it's a competitive space for sure. But also, I feel like a select few get far further. And I say this as someone who, you know, I'm probably a normie when it comes to any of this. So if I don't know you, but like, maybe in the spaces, it's more. I'll say this speculatively, that it is a more lucrative career here than it would be there, period. But how much more lucrative? Because some of his expectations seem very much wishful thinking of, yep, this art piece that I just did here, we can sell this for a bank over there. I don't know about that part. Pennies, sir. Maybe.
Yeah. Like, you just don't wake up one day and become a famous artist. Like, and unfortunately over here, art has become a capitalist, like, style endeavor as well. So it's kind of like, from what I do know about, if he like art, like if he has sculptures and stuff like that, that's kind of a hard field to break into. You have to know a lot of people. For the poetry, I have no clue how you can like make actual bank being a poet. So either route is not something that is going to pay off immediately. That we do know.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. That's how I feel as well. So then he later has he's planning a meetup with Debbie. So they're going to meet up at a cafe to talk about the fight and everything that went down. And this was so funny. So Debbie gets to the cafe first and she is, you know, she's asked what she would like. Do you have drinks? They're like, no, we have coffee and tea only. And then she says, no, absinthe. I was like, do you mean absinthe? Why are you saying it like that? And then she said something about how it is dry for drinks here. I was like, Debbie, you're at a cafe. If you went to a Starbucks and you said, can I have bourbon? They don't have that. So this is not the establishment for that, ma'am.
Yeah, she asked for a Texas margarita. I had never heard of a Texas margarita in my entire life. So, of course, I had to Google it. I thought it would be something like mind-blowing, something really different. The only thing that's the difference between a Texas margarita and a regular margarita is putting a little bit of orange juice in there with your lime juice.
Oh, wow.
Right. Okay. Exactly. I was like, oh, okay. Sure. Like, what? Oh, man. She's funny. Can I just say right here, like, the last time I was on here, I didn't get to talk about Debbie and Osama because, you know, they premiered like 3 or 4 episodes in. Mm-hmm. And listening to you talk about them like over the past few weeks, like I see why people like love Debbie. She's very, very funny. And she basically just speaks in American what's the motivational lines. Like that's all she's like well-known proverb, American proverbs, like I wrote a check that my butt can't cash. Like,
yeah, I genuinely, Mari, I cannot envision a world where we don't get Debbie back for A Single Life or something. They're gonna find something to do with her for sure.
Yeah, her, oh my god, she, it was just so many, I didn't even write them all down, but I was just cracking up because like every other line out of her mouth was something, that one of those lines that you've heard a million times in your day-to-day life if you grew up here in America. Mm-hmm. I really
the Debbie-isms were out in full swing. Yes, for sure.
The Debbie-isms.
Oh my god. So yeah, so then finally Osama shows up, and before he does, she tells us in confessional, for Osama to win me back there would have to be an act of God. So this to me said, spoiler alert, nothing this man says will work on me. I am right. done. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the conversation was everything you thought. She mentioned that you're making everything about the visa. Your love is very conditional. And your love basically is, I will love you my love does exist, if Debbie does take me to the USA. And she feels like he loves her less. Basically, after this conversation, what I felt like was Debbie felt like, oh, the love is 100% conditional upon me taking you to the States, and I'm no fool. I will not succumb to your threat, sir. That's how I felt about the situation.
Yeah, and Osama really didn't do anything to combat that feeling, because every time that she said something to that effect, he didn't really defend himself. Like, he really didn't deny it as vigorously as you should if you are really, you know, anxious that you're going to lose this woman that you actually love. So I was like, okay. But I will not lie, when they started talking about it and he kept saying the plan was that we were going to go back to the United States, was it not? And Debbie saying here, like, oh yeah, to like visit. So I was like, oh, okay. So they did actually talk about her coming to Morocco and them going back to the US. So he didn't make it up whole cloth. So this really could have been a giant misunderstanding. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, okay, so they did talk a little bit about going to the US to visit. and that's how Debbie saw it. Debbie saw we'll go back to visit and stuff, but he was seeing it as, no, we're going to go back to live. And so I was like, okay, maybe this was a misunderstanding more than I thought it was, but I don't know. Did you think that at all, or am I wishful?
To me, I don't necessarily think it was a misunderstanding as much as I think it was more of a, I'll keep it vague. That way I can point to, we technically said I would go to the States, right? So that counts. That counts. That's how I took it. So for example, okay, it's like, if I said, yeah, Mari, I would love to have you back on the show. And then you take it as, well, you assume, oh, he messaged me today, this week, he means next week. And then next week, you're like, hey, I thought I was going to be on. I'm like, no, I said you'd be on the show this season. And you're like, well, no, you messaged me now. You know what I mean? It's like a little bit open to interpretation. Yeah,
that makes sense.
I feel like that was kind of I don't think they dead on talked about it, because visiting the States and moving to the States and visiting Morocco and moving to Morocco are four different things. And somehow they got three of them here. So
they were not on the same page about any of the things.
No, none whatsoever. So then we get to the next scene and she's on her way to the airport and she tells us Osama taught her the hard lessons. I've been burnt by the worst of them. I will no longer be communicating with Osama again, but I will be, you know, trying to find love, which to me, again, screams, we're going to see you on The Single Life.
I would watch Debbie on The Single Life. I am okay with that. And I actually did like her attitude here, because when she said that she had like holed herself up for 12 years, I didn't know that. I must have missed that somewhere. And so the fact that she, what is essentially wasted 3 years of her life, but is still open to love, I love that type of messaging, you know, because it does take, you're more brave when you put yourself out there than to just, you know, slink away and close off to people. So Debbie is a gem. I like Debbie. And like you said, I'm mad that Julian is right. It was right.
I'm so pissed off that guy, like, I literally was willing to give Osama the world. And now I'm also not going to communicate with Osama ever again. And my life will be fine. Right. Okay. I will say, though, if Debbie comes back, can we somehow put in the contract that Julian cannot be on the show?
Please. Oh, my gosh. Please. No, like, Julian.
He couldn't get a background check on Osama because he was abroad. I don't need an episode where Julian's like, all right, so I did a background check on this guy and No, stop that. I want Debbie to discover the world on her own without you, sir.
Yeah. Yes, please. More Debbie, no Julian.
That is, we agree. All right. Seconded. So then let's move over and talk about Gabe and Isabel, Mari. Not a lot of content here, but we do get it set up a little bit. You want to go ahead on this one?
Yes. So I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, do I get to talk about Gabe and Isabel's wedding day? Of course not, because it's 90 day. And then they have to leave us on some sort of a cliffhanger. But it's Gabe and Isabel's wedding day. Gabe is so happy. Oh my God. It was like, he was so happy. He was in high spirits. He was talking about how he never thought he'd get married because of who he is. He thought he would just date. That made me sad, but then it made me happy because I'm like, he gets to marry the love of his life. He gets to marry her family. I was so happy for him. And then he gets a text or a call or something. I think it was a text from his sister, Monica, who says she's not coming to the wedding because they got into a fight the night before, which I'm like, why are y'all going out the night before your wedding? Like, what? And they went out, her husband went out the night before and they were out and Isabel was supposed to join them, but of course their wedding is tomorrow. So of course she's a little late to meeting up with them. But Monica just thought that it was, you know, kind of disrespectful, it seemed like, and Monica wanted to leave when Isabel was arriving, and Gabe tried to manage the situation. But him and Monica ended up getting into a fight, And Monica decides that she wants to, the next day, tell Gabe that she's not coming to his wedding. And I'm so pissed at Monica. Like, how unreasonable are you being right now? It is your brother's wedding day. Like, ma'am, what are you doing? Annoyed.
Yeah, annoyed. I'm annoyed too. My only question is, this better not be a, oh, I got the stomach bug. Because then it's like, well, that boohoo, y'all really made us get angry for nothing. But ultimately, Gabe, and I do think we believe that this all stems from an argument that they had the night before, because I guess Isabel was late to the dinner they had planned. And as Isabel's getting near to arriving, that's when Monica said, you know what, I'm down to leave. We need to leave. And, you know, Gabe says, no, she's about to come here. And then they argue over that, because essentially Gabe ends up saying something along the lines of, you always ruin things in my relationship. You always get in the way. You cause my relationship problems.
Yeah.
So the drama does start from there. I feel like, what's it called? I feel like this should hopefully be fine, but I also feel like, given how his mom reacted, it felt like this is something that happens frequently with this family.
Yes. So Gabe is telling his mom, and his mom is doing a really good job of being supportive. However, she is telling Gabe, and that's what Gabe said. And like you said, Monica, I guess, does this pretty frequently. So they're kind of just like, okay. The mom is like, Gabe, don't worry about her. This is your wedding day. You know, she's, let her do whatever she's want to do, but it's your day. You know, let's focus on that. And then Gabe starts crying, and then I'm just pissed, because why are you making Gabe cry on his wedding day? And then they said, should we tell Isabel? I was like, no, please do not.
Definitely
tell
not.
Isabel. You never tell the bride if something is going on wrong on their wedding day. Again, as somebody who got married, had a huge wedding, I probably said this a million times, my cake didn't show up to my wedding. Everybody kept that away from me until the last possible moment. So like, don't tell the bride anything, especially when Isabel is working as hard as she is on this wedding. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, her mom pulled an all-nighter to get the bridesmaid dresses sewn up.
Yes. Yes, Isabel, I mean, she clearly was doing it all her own, you know what I'm saying? And I really wish she had some additional help, because it's like 3 hours to the wedding. She's not even at the venue. She gets to the venue. She was expecting Gabe. Gabe's not there. That's a big like cliffhanger that we leave on, is like, we don't see Gabe after we see him ask his mom to give him some alone time. So Isabel is like, I'm running around doing something. All Gabe had to do was shower. Why isn't he here? It goes to 90 minutes into the wedding, and Isabel is still not, she hair and makeup is not done. I have not seen the dress. Again, as a former bride, I am in disbelief. I'm like, how are you are nowhere near getting close to ready. You have an hour and a half left. What is happening right now?
Yeah, I am a little bit annoyed with Gabe, if I'm being honest.
Yes,
I feel like literally everything about this wedding has been on Isabel's shoulders, and you've been fine with that arrangement. But then when your end of the bargain is show up on the most stressful day, like, first of all, amazing day, but then also stressful day, do your part, show up. Even if it's like for 2 seconds, make the appearance and be like, hey, so I need to go, but I wanted to like be here to, you know, at least see you off. I don't know. I feel like this was a huge blunder by Gabe. And also, you know, this also kind of for me stems a little bit from Gabe's avoidant tactics of not really wanting to have these heavy conversations, which, like you said, probably for the best on the wedding day for sure. But also, I feel like, Gabe, you need to figure out, are you going to say something or not? Because if you're going to say something, then go say something. If you're not going to tell her, then you got to fake it till you make it. Pretend everything's fine.
Right.
But you have to be there. You not showing up to be there makes flags go up.
Yeah. And I'm really hoping this is some sort of like, well, we know he's not there. Like, because Isabel knows he's not there. But I feel like I hope this is some sort of trick to keep us guessing, and that he's surprising her and doing something, you know. But who knows? They gave us a shot that I guess that's supposed to be Gabe just laying in the bed. But that kind of just reeked of manipulation to me.
Yeah. I don't know if I fully trust it, but I also felt right. the same way. Yeah. Okay. So then that's about all we have here. Okay. That's about all we have here for Gabe and Isabel. Again, no next time on. I have to imagine if we're predicting here, they're going to get married. It's going to be fine.
Yeah. And, you know, if it doesn't start on time, it doesn't start on time. You know, it's OK. You still get the venue for a certain amount of hours. So it's as far most of the time you get the venue for a certain amount of hours. So if it doesn't start on time, it just means you're just going to cut your reception short. It's fine. It's fine. Everybody, it's fine.
Now, I want to get a prediction from you. Do you think Monica does show up at the end of the wedding or no?
Unfortunately, yes, I think she does, which pisses me off even more. Because it's like, so you did all of this just to be a dick on the wedding day. Like, I do think she'll show up. And I'm like, that's even worse. Like, at least stand in your convictions.
I don't get you flew to another country for this wedding. Exactly. Don't tell me you're not going to show up. That makes no sense to me.
Exactly. Over something very, very petty. Like, get over yourself.
Yeah, it's not your day, Monica. Okay, allow it.
Right.
Okay. So then let's go on ahead and take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk about Danielle and Johan. All right. So Danielle and Johan's story has been brewing these last couple of weeks. Obviously, Johan had a birthday, and right around that birthday, Danielle floated the idea of, hey, my friend Taylan, who also happens to be my ex, is in town and I want to see him. And Johan was like, no, I'm not okay with that. She's like, oh, tough. You're being immature. I'm going to see him. And then that caused issues. And then they argued. And then later she was like, I think it'd be better for you if you met Taylan and asked him all the questions and you'd see, like, you know, there's nothing there. He's like, okay, we'll hang out. So then last week they hung out. And Johan did everything but ask normal questions, asking about penis sizes and sex ability and all this. Weird. So weird energy for sure. So then this week, imagine the look on my face when I find out that Johan wants to meet up with Taylan one-on-one to apologize and to, you know, hear him out and talk to him one-on-one. This is a swerve and a half.
Big swerve. And not only that, but he met him on a basketball court, which is technically like Taylor's home field advantage since he is a semi-pro basketball player. And they actually play one-on-one, and Johan being okay with losing was kind of funny to me. But I thought this was very big of Johan to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the conversation between the two men. So I'm shocked. But Johan, like, I'm going to give him his props for this before I kind of give him no props, but also more props, too, because I'm also going to get into Danielle. So,
yeah. So I agree with you in this moment, specifically in the Taylan and Johan segment. I thought Johan did incredible. I was very happy to see Johan really, you know, take the experience, hang out with Taylan. Definitely did not learn the rules of one-on-one. He didn't, because Taylan would shoot a ball and then instead of going back to the perimeter, he just would dunk it or just lay it up right as he got the rebound. And Taylan's like, I didn't explain the rules to him because of the language barrier. It's fine. I still beat him. It was close, but I beat him. So,
right.
Okay, we'll take it. That's fine. But Johan does apologize for the rude questions, which was great. And then starts asking a little bit more deeper, says, you know, was Danielle controlling in your relationship? And Taylan essentially says, she is not a submissive woman. She is someone who wants to do what she wants to do. But, you know, I agree there should be, both of you should be in control together. You have to be the same level. And then he asks Johan, do you feel like you have no control in the relationship? He says, sometimes I feel like I do, sometimes I don't. But then he tells us that he feels like he's done way more compromises for this relationship than Danielle has.
Yeah, I really feel that Johan has a problem that he doesn't know how to communicate. So the only way he thinks he can follow through on communicating that is explaining gender roles. But I don't think the problem here is gender roles. The problem here is Danielle doesn't respect his feelings. And that's totally different. You know what I'm saying? Like, Danielle doesn't respect his feelings. Danielle doesn't listen to him just for simple requests. Like, I get Johan comes from a culture where it's a male dominated culture and stuff like that. And I think he's using that to explain to him why he doesn't like that Danielle isn't listening to him. But there, I don't think that's the correct example he should be giving. He should just be like, girl, I tell you that something makes me uncomfortable and you just completely disregard it. I tell you I want to do this, you completely disregard it. I think that's the main problem in the relationship. But for some reason, it's just getting boiled down to male versus female gender roles.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel like this is because ultimately this is something he can point to that's like tangible, right? Of like, this is the issue. I feel like it's definitely more, it's deeper than that. And I feel like, you know, the biggest indicator of this is the conversation next. So obviously the Taylan hangout finishes. And then when he meets up with Danielle later, he tells Danielle that, you know, everything was good. He's great. I had a good time with him. And then Danielle says she doesn't want to fight all the time. And then she says, I need an apology from you. And he's like, what do you mean? She's like, I need you to say, you know, I'm sorry for da 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 da. And then he says, well, did you apologize? You brought up that you want to hang out with an ex of yours before the day before my birthday. Wow. Okay, Johan, the day before your birthday really causing you issues here. But this is the big indicator for me. She wants him to apologize and say, I was wrong. He thinks she was wrong first, so she should apologize first. And I think they both think the other should apologize first, which means no one's apologizing.
Yeah. And I, as I was watching this, I literally like wrote down, she doesn't respect him. And then 2 seconds later, he says, Danielle, you don't respect me. I was like, thank you. Like, finally, the actual issue is here on the table. I'm sorry. She does not respect this man. Like, let's review. They get married. He tells her like, oh, you know, I want to go to the States. She says, yes, I'll go to the States. Yes, I will apply for your visa. She goes back to the States, doesn't apply for this man's visa, doesn't tell him that she's not going to apply for his visa until she comes back to the Dominican Republic and said, hey, you know, when you asked me to apply for that visa, I didn't do it. Also, I want to stay here. Also, I have male friends that you just have to be okay with me hanging out. Oh, yeah, this business that you think that you're running.
Your business sucks.
It sucks. We're not doing this. Like, I'm sorry. I agree with him here. This is not about male and female gender roles. This is about how Danielle treats Johan, and she does not treat him like she respects him as her husband. I'm sorry.
I don't think you need to apologize because I agree with you. I feel like ultimately I always will disagree with Johan's thoughts of, you know, gender roles. Obviously, this is something he's grown up to see and accept as like the regular, but we're in 2023. Put that out the rear view mirror. That is a outdated way of thinking. But I do agree with you that I feel like she doesn't respect him. And I feel like she has kind of felt like, I'm going to lay down the law. And, you know, my husband, he's a young dummy. I got to lead the way. He got to follow me because I know better. And that I disagree with. I feel like to act like you are more superior and your way of thinking is the correct way of thinking is also not fair to Johan. Because, again, this is like one of the few points we've definitely talked a bunch of times on this podcast. But relationships are complicated and no two people in a relationship are the same. Like, yeah, there's going to be some things in your relationship that you're both going to see eye to eye on, which is good. But then there's going to be some things that, you know, you might deem okay and the other will not. And ultimately, you have to either come to a compromise on those things or be exactly where you are right now.
Yeah. And I think that Johan saying like Danielle values her friends over him and then her just be like, nope, I'm done. Like, and then saying like, oh, this is like a prison. Like, what is with these women comparing things to prison? Like, y'all don't know what prison is. Clearly,
you have not done time and it shows.
Yeah. And I'm just like, this is a normal conversation that normal couples have. Like, I've had this conversation very early in my relationship. And it's one of those things where you have to find balance. I have found the perfect balance. And I love that because that's what you need to do. If he's saying like, hey, I know you like your friends, but I would also, you know, want you to, you know, think of me when you're making these plans with your friend, that is not a big ask. That is not a bellyache. That is not him nagging. That is normal relationship stuff. And the way that she just disregards anything that he says, again, just shows me that I don't think she respects him.
Yeah. Again, it's very, you know, even in this episode, she says something along the lines of, you know, the beach is great because it gives me, it's going to bring me peace and like help me get through anytime he says something immature. And to me, I've been feeling like she keeps using the word immature to substitute something I don't like.
Yep. Yeah. She keeps harping almost, it's almost like she harps on the age thing. Like just saying that he's immature, he doesn't know what he's doing. It's like you're not putting any faith in him. She asked for trust, for him to trust her. You don't trust him.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, yeah, do I think that Johan can be a bit of a dummy? Of course. But also, this is your dummy in your relationship. He gets equal say in your relationship. The minute you think you should get more say, or that, oh no, I'm going to disregard this statement or this feeling because it's stupid and immature, you're saying that you deserve more of a say. And then obviously he's going to have issues with that too. Now, should they both just apologize and move on? Probably, but they're not going to do that. Anyway, she says something along the lines of call a priest, call your mother, call your grandmother. I'm done.
Puts the hat on her face. I don't know, because she says, oh, maybe this is what it was supposed to be like. I should spend a year in the DR by myself. I mean, I don't think they're done, unfortunately. But I never thought I'd be coming here to semi-defend Johan. You know what I'm saying? Like, she points out, like, oh, when something doesn't go your way, you then try and make people uncomfortable around you, which I agree with. But you know what you could kind of do to make sure that part doesn't happen? Kind of just respect what he's saying a little bit. Take what he's saying into consideration, and then hopefully we won't get to the part where he's embarrassing you out in front of people. You know what I'm saying? Like, these are a very easy problem. To me, outsider looking in, this is a very easy problem to fix. And I don't know if either one of them have the capabilities to do it.
Yeah. And I don't know if I trust either one of them to do it, honestly. Exactly. Yeah. So then that's all we have for Danielle and Johan. Shall we move over to a couple that we've not seen together and who have not seen each other for 5 long months? And finally,
finally,
we're back to Chris and Jamie. And I say finally, because Mari, I have feelings, but I want you to set us up here.
Yeah. So many of the feelings. So we get Chris like coming back. She's in the airport and she's like, oh my God, I'm finally back in Colombia after 5 months. And it's definitely different than when I first came here. She said, I was supposed to be back here a month ago for Jamie's birthday, but I had to push it back a month because something happened with her son and she needed to stay. This was the moment where I was like, it sounds like she keeps making excuses to prolong, like she kept making excuses to prolong her stay in the US. She says she was excited but nervous. I don't know, something about Chris in this segment for me felt so disingenuous. I don't know. It was very disingenuous. Like Chris is not acting like she married this woman. It's like she's acting like they're still dating. Like, this is your wife, ma'am. Like, what did you, just the setup, I was like, something feels off to me.
Yeah, I feel like, it was brought up twice. And in the second time this was mentioned, Chris said something to the effect of my son ran into some trouble, so I couldn't leave Alabama, because the whole thing is it's been 5 months, but she was supposed to come back at the very latest last month because it was Jamie's birthday, and she ended up missing Jamie's birthday 2 years running. Right. They've been together for 2 years. She's missed both birthdays. And she said, you know, something happened with my son. I couldn't leave. So that is one part. The second part is she's back now. But this issue that we've not talked about yet, because we'll get to it at the end of their segment, is that in these 5 months, she paid rent for the first month and the second month and then didn't pay rent for the remaining 3 months.
Right, which is so misleading from the last week's episode and the week before that Jar talked about, where she's telling her mom that, like, oh, I'm sending her money, I'm paying for stuff, and she's a gold digger. It's like, clearly she's not a gold digger, because there's no gold to dig, because you're not sending the money, ma'am, that you promised you would send. So this, like, all of this screams fishy to me, but about Chris. But so Jamie, we get Jamie's side. She's getting ready. She's like so nervous. And I'm sorry, every time I see Jamie and Jamie's reactions to Chris, I'm like, Jamie really loves Chris. And my question is, why?
Why?
Why? Because I'm sorry, Chris, the way the reaction that Chris has given her over the last two episodes, like with the phone call, maybe three, what, but the Zoom call where she storms off, the talking about her behind her back to her mom, like any type of resistance or pushback that Jamie, or any type of accountability that Jamie tries to place on Chris, Chris immediately just flies off the handle and acts irrationally. And I am so, so confused as to why Jamie, one, still loves this woman, clearly, because I think she does. I truly, really think she loves Chris. She had s'mores prepared for her in their apartment, which was really cute. We'll talk about the uniform onesies. Like, Jamie, I really feel that Jamie is in this relationship because she wants to be. But I just don't think I know why Chris is in this relationship. And after staying 5 months in the U.S., you might as well have gotten that surgery that would have kept you there for a year. Like,
yeah.
Ugh, I'm sorry. You can go, Puya. I just don't understand. Like, I don't understand.
It's a weird dynamic with the two of them, because on one hand, like you said, we've heard her talk to her mom and cite, you know, I feel like I'm working to try and get money. And the mom's like, well, I don't like that you're a sugar mama. And then Chris doesn't argue back to that. So, okay, do you agree with your mom that you're kind of like the show mama? Because if that's truly how you feel, you've kind of made this the relationship between you two. You've yep. made this the vibe by not being with your wife, by saying, I have to stay here and work to make us money, and then not send money. Because if you're staying there to make money, then send the money. Then why is that an issue? Because right. then when later, so okay, let's dive into their quote good parts. So they arrive, Chris arrives, and you know, Jamie, like you said, has put up the s'more set for them, because I guess, you know, it's an inside thing, like she didn't know about s'mores, and now they're going to do it together. Mm-hmm. And then she also bought a furry onesie to go hand in hand with Chris's furry onesie. And mm-hmm. that kind of made the vibes better, according to Chris. But then Jamie does tell us that they only slept last night, nothing more. So clearly the romance wasn't completely romancing. We did mm-hmm. get the B-roll of them recording what felt like a TikTok in their onesies. And yeah. that was a thing that happened, that we can just say it happened and then move on. So then later when they go have the belated birthday celebration with the pool and stuff, this is where Jamie has told us, I am going to hear her side, but she needs to hear mine. And yeah. the minute she tries to bring up her side, she's like, you know, I'm just saying, like, you know, we got this place and you've not been here for 5 months. And then you paid for the first rent and then the second month, not the third and fourth. And before she can finish, Chris jumps in and says, well, no, that's like you bought a place that was 150 more. And Jamie's like, please, can mm-hmm. I just finish? Can mm-hmm. I just finish? I don't think she's, you know, she's getting louder volume wise yeah. because Chris is getting louder. Mm-hmm. And then when she gets louder, Chris is like, don't yell at me, lower your tone. And I thought Chris is the one who made it become more what's the word I'm looking for? Hostile. Yes. I don't think the, because, you know, when someone's talking louder versus talking louder hostily, I don't think that's a word. It's different. Right. Like I can speak louder. Like if I'm at a club and there's music and I'm like, yeah, yeah, we had a good time this weekend. It was great. That's not me yelling at you. Whereas if I start putting in the aggressive tone, then I'm yelling at you and I'm doing it loudly. So right. I felt like this was a misrepresentation from Chris to take it as an argument. And Chris just storms off at the first moment that she could find an exit here.
Yeah. Yep. It was very, very weird. Like, can I just say the welcome was awkward. Like the moment that Chris got there, it felt like very awkward and stuff.
I agree.
And I don't know if I don't want to be this person, right? But this is Chris's first like real relationship with a woman, she said, right? Like I'm really wondering if Chris is having a little bit of hard time adjusting to like the realities of being like married to a woman and her like own sexuality. Like they just seem like Jamie clearly seems so much more into Chris than Chris seems to be into Jamie. And maybe that's just my thoughts, but as someone who listened to most of who just listened to your podcast for most of it and only watched episodes here and there, this was the one time that like I really truly watched their like dynamic. And I'm like, it just doesn't feel as loving as I feel like it should be. And I don't know if that's rude to say, but I just feel like Jamie loves Chris way more than Chris loves Jamie.
I think I could agree with that.
Yeah. And so then when Chris does this whole big thing, she rents out that pool and stuff. I was really like, oh, is Jamie's friends coming? I was like, no, it's just the two of them. I was like, okay. This also made me think like Jamie's love language, I think, is quality time. And I think Chris's is gift giving because for somebody who thinks they're being used as a sugar mama or a gold digger, she keeps doing these elaborate gestures, like grand gestures, to get back on Jamie's good side with like the camping and then the buying this pool and all of this stuff. It's like maybe it's just that, like they just have different love languages. And then when they finally sit down to try and talk about it, it just goes completely left because Chris is just talking over Jamie when Jamie, I'm pretty sure, is having trouble talking in English to begin with. And then Chris is just yelling at her over it and then stomps off. And that's the end of the episode. It's like, I'm sorry, like Chris is annoying to me. And I want better for Jamie. I truly do. I'm sorry.
I think that's fair. I think a lot of us feel the same way about it. To me, I think what you said right now is very accurate because I think Jamie at no point has wanted like a complete lavish living, expensive, right? This, that. The house is empty. Like, she had no problem with the house being empty. So to me, I feel like the whole thing about, no, she always wants money. She only ever brings up rent, right? The rent.
Yep.
We didn't pay the rent because she doesn't want to be behind on the rent. She doesn't want to have to deal with the landlord. I think beyond that, she's fine. And obviously, yes, the place they found initially, by the way, they said $100. I feel like Chris threw on an extra 50, like that's going to make anything different. And, you know, $150 isn't no money. Isn't $0. That's still money. But she keeps saying 150, 100, like as an excuse of that's why I had to stay back and work more. I 150, you tack on five of those together. That's what? 150, 750, right?
Something like that.
You're telling me you delayed for less than $1,000? Come on. Your ticket was probably more because you booked one way.
And yeah, exactly. And you kept probably have to pushing it back or whatever. Like,
yeah.
It all feels disingenuous to me. I don't think Chris is ready to be in this marriage. And the fact that they got married, how many days did they get? Was it still like the 9 days after she got there? They were like,
was it maybe 3 weeks into their relationship? Is at that point, 3 weeks into living together, they had gotten a place, they got married, and Chris went back to the States and now has been in the States for 5 months, and now they're back together. And she's been here a day before she's already stormed off on Jamie. Jamie deserves better. You married this poor woman, and it's been no relationship since. So,
and then abandoned her.
Yeah.
For the love of God, abandoned her.
Let's sign the divorce papers. Please. Welcome Jamie to 90 Day Fiancé, the single life. We'll see you there. You and Debbie.
Please, because let's end this now. This is, I just can't stand to watch Chris talk to Jamie the way that she does. I really can't.
No, it's very off-putting, and I also get very uncomfortable as well. Okay, one last couple to talk about here, and we are here to talk about the conclusion of the Jen and Rishi storyline. Mari, these friends really came in and ruined this relationship.
Yes, they said hi, break up, bye. Like, they just Jen is going to be on the plane next to her friends going home in a day,
literally.
Amazing work from them. They accomplished what they came to do. They clearly came to do that, so good for them. Do you want to set it up?
Sure. So obviously, last time we saw Jen and Rishi, that was their biggest episode of the season, where Jen had her friends pull up Myra and Randy to Rishi's family home, along with a translator. That's where they drop the bomb on his mom that, they're engaged and they're going to get married. We just wanted to see how you feel about that. And then obviously the mom, like any person with a modicum of social understanding, agreed to their faces. Oh yeah. This, as long as he's happy, that's what we care about. Then behind closed doors was said, how old is she? Oh, she's 16 years older than you. Yeah, bet. We're not doing this. Meanwhile, so now Rishi knows, okay, Jen, my mom is not approving of Jen, and I feel like I'm going to end up siding with my mom because I can't turn my back on my family. Meanwhile, on the other side of town, you've got Jen thinking they fully won the battle, and now they need to figure out the joint living situation, because I don't really want to live joint like that. So he's going to have to decide, ma'am, you're not getting, they don't even approve of you. You think you won that, you didn't. That didn't work.
That was so funny. I'm not gonna lie, that was so funny. I was like, Jen and her friends are grabbing tea, and she thinks that went well. My notes literally say LOL. Like, I'm not gonna lie, that tickled my funny bone. She's over here thinking, okay, now that that's out of the way, let's think about our living situation. No, girl, no. You are in for a rude awakening. And like you guys kind of said last week, it does feel like another obstacle. And again, I'm trying to figure out, where did the misunderstanding come from here? Because if you are an American, all you have to do is just, I would say pick up a book, but that might be asking for too much. Just watch anything that's not Eurocentrically based, American based, to know that, like you guys have said plenty of times, that a lot of Asian communities and Asian cultures like revolve around multi-generational housing and households. Like, that is such a common thing in other cultures. Like, I know that, you know that. Like, it is not something hard to figure out. So Rishi's parents thinking that Rishi's going to get married and his sister-in-law is going to move into the house with them, and they're all going to be a family and they're going to take care of them. That is something that is so common. It is so common in so many cultures. It's very prominent in that culture specifically, and across like many, many, many different like cultures and stuff. So her being surprised, I'm like, so you just vibes. We just came to India on vibes. But I am, after watching their whole segment, I'm like, okay. I think Rishi did promise her something that he could not truly give her, even though he wants to. Like, even though you could tell he wants to, he just can't. And before you go, I didn't like the xenophobia from her friends. Like, oh, the whole joint family, she doesn't want to be locked down in a house, it's prison. Like, again, y'all don't know what prison is.
Yeah, I the less I say about the friends at this point, the better.
The better
for my own well-being. But I agree with you, right? I feel like, listen, forget even doing research at this point, because they are hopeless when it comes to research in this franchise. You're gonna be on 90 Day, right? You're an American woman looking to marry a man from India, right? Don't you just look up the show you're gonna be on and think, huh, are there other people that like have a similar background to me that were on the show? Oh, Jenny and Sumit have very similar stories. Jenny's a little older than me, but she's also an American whose name is Jen. Interesting. Let me look at this couple and kind of see their story, because obviously they live apart, but also they had conversations, and one of the big obstacles was the family thinking, well, you got to take care of us, and Jenny's older, so then you're gonna have to take care of her. Can you take care of us? Like you said, this is a big part of the culture. And while I do think there's a world where Rishi implied that, yeah, I don't mind living away from them, like I'll I have a more modern mindset when it comes to that, I do think he sold her a bill of goods a little bit there,
yeah,
in that regard. But ultimately, that's also, if I'm going to give him some grace, which I don't think he necessarily needs a lot of, but if I'm going to give him some grace, I would look at it and think maybe he thought in the moment he could, and then he realized, oh, I was wrong. And, I can't do that. I thought I was capable. I'm not capable. That's a thing that could have happened very easily. So for me, I feel like, just again, thinking that that's it, that's the end of the story, we're good, we just have to get through that, was short-sighted. Because then later, Jen and Rishi meet up, because Rishi gets to the house, the friends leave the house, and she's like, this joint living thing, I feel like I don't love that. But anyway, be honest, what did you tell them? And he's like, I didn't tell them anything. My point of view is not important to them, really. And then he tells us, I will always choose you over them. When she mentions that they were completely opposed to the marriage because of the age, she's like, that's ridiculous. Is it?
Is it
ridiculous? I feel like in a lot of circles, not necessarily culturally binding, in a lot of circles, a 16-year age gap will at least leave someone thinking, oh, wow, that's a lot. Maybe they'll be supporting right after they say that, but they might still feel that. So for me, saying that's ridiculous is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's not that ridiculous. And her friends are like, are you sure you're going to be okay? What's he going to do? He's not going to do anything to her. It's okay. Fine. Whatever. And I thought it was so interesting how she was so, I had to laugh a little bit, because she came into this conversation like, I have to tell him that the deal breaker is I don't want to live together. And then he's trying to talk to her and she tells him like that's her deal breaker, and he's kind of like, that I don't really care about, maybe we can figure that out later, that's fine. And he's like, but my family doesn't like you. Like, that was I thought that was funny.
It was hilarious, because again, she came into this combo thinking, okay, the hard part is over. Ma'am, the hard part hasn't even begun. You're not going to be together in 5 minutes,
right?
And here's the thing, I do see, Rishi brings up, well, I feel like maybe if we had more time. She's like, no, we've had 3 years. Like, what was going to change if you talked to your mom about me 3 months from now? I'm so older than you. Fair. Yeah. That is very fair. In any universe that Rishi had a game plan? No. I think Rishi was always going to not do anything until the day before and then wing it. So, like, to me, let's be honest, that's what was going to happen. So, with that in mind, I do think that she's right here, that nothing would have changed. However, I feel like if they had a game plan, if they had planned that, okay, so for the next 2 months, we're going to hang out with them one time here, one time there. One day we're going to go there and we will take them out to dinner. We'll make them dinner. I think bonding would have helped, right? Bonding would have helped. Them knowing her more would have helped. Because ultimately, when you don't know someone, and your second impression, because the first impression was the first time when she kept peppering them with questions about the arranged marriage situation. The second time you've met potentially the bride to be, her friends are pulling in an inquisition. They're dropping a bomb on you. They're saying, yeah, she's getting married. How do you feel? And then also, you don't know her. Yeah. What are you going to look at? Her age? That, like, you don't have a lot to go off of. But if you had created a bond, potentially something could happen. Now, also, to counter argue myself here, obviously, Jenny had quite a bit of bonding done with Sumit's family because she had stayed with them and was hanging out with them. They just didn't know that there was a relationship happening as well. And that felt like a little slight, but also Jenny's and Sumit's age difference is approximately double what these two is. So I feel like there could have been something here.
Yeah, it's truly a catch 22. It's like, we'll never know. We'll never know now, unfortunately, if that special date would have worked or not, because she didn't wait to the special date. And it's kind of funny because Rishi could be like, he kind of said in the conversation, he was like, if we waited to the special date, maybe this would have been different. I agree. I don't think it would have been different. Like you said, it might have been, if they did the groundwork, it could have been a little bit easier. But I truly don't think that this would have ended any other way, since Rishi, unlike Sumit, is not willing to go against his family. Like we talk about Sumit a lot here and his grifterness, his scamminess. But one thing for sure is he was willing to go up against his family for some things. You know what I'm saying? Like he fought a little bit for Jenny. At least I feel like a little bit more than Rishi did here, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I mean, Rishi's ready to just be like, oh, you don't approve? Okay, I'm not going to go against you. That's fine. So
I truly think Rishi loves her. And I think Rishi wants his cake and eat it too. And she was just never going to get that in this situation. If his parents are so staunchly against it, which I'm sure they are, they have so many concerns about him staying with them, helping them. And then I'm glad they haven't said anything about grandkids or anything like that, from what I understand. So it kind of feels like the only thing that they're kind of really worried about is like him staying with them, kind of. The age difference, like we said, because of her age difference, she clearly can't give him kids. But I don't think they didn't necessarily say that was the issue. But Rishi wants to be with Jen, and he really thought that maybe he could make it work where they could live somewhere else and then he can just come and help his parents and stuff like that. I truly believe that he thought that. And Jen even says that she thinks that he thought that as well. And the most ironic thing ever said on this stupid program, Jen says, maybe he should have done his homework.
Yeah, he should have done his homework for sure. That's what I was also thinking, Jen.
Pot, meat, kettle. Like what?
So funny. Yeah. She gives him the ring back and they're gonna break up. He's in tears, they're embracing. This is for the best, folks. I'm fine with this. What I don't like is, similar to Julian, I don't like the idea that Myra and Randy are going to get on that plane to go back and be like, no, we really did something here. We helped. No, you did nothing. Congratulations. Your presence did nothing. You achieved nothing. This was always going to happen with or without you. You did nothing.
I'm so annoyed. Like, a lot of the skeptical family members were right this episode. I'm very mad about that.
We hate when that happens.
Yes, we do.
Like the worst case scenario coming to life every time. But that it brings us to the end of the episode. I think ultimately now we have the finale and part one of the tell-all starting next week. And then part two, like I said, I don't know if there's a part three. There currently is a scheduled 8 p.m. 90 day programming on TLC, but it doesn't have a description, so I can't tell what it is. But we'll see. Either way, Mari, I appreciate you for stopping by on the Hot Mess Express this week to kind of bring us closer to the finale. It's always a delight getting to talk to you. Let the people know, where can they find you and what are the projects you have going on at the moment?
Of course, I absolutely love coming here to talk to the conductor of the Hot Mess Express about these people. Like you said, we found out the next season is about to be our favorite iteration before the 90 days. So I am putting my bid in right now. Make sure you have me on for that season. Hey, as well. Listen,
guaranteed. Now, are you excited to see Gino and Jasmine back on your screen again? That's my question.
So no, thank you. But however, I am still here. Gino and Jasmine.
They're going to be annoying, but I will say, looking at the preview with all the new couples, I'm excited to talk about some of these couples. I think we're in for a fun one.
Me too. So, but thank you so much. I'm so glad to be on here right now. Me and Matt are on hiatus for the Wrestling Rehab, but if you want to catch up during our break, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/wrestlingfeed. Currently the connect on post show recaps with me, Chappelle, and Latanya Starks is also on hiatus while we figure out what our next project is. If you have any suggestions on what the connect can cover next, you can send us an email to connect@postshowrecaps.com. We're open to all types of suggestions. You can follow me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much. That's two, like the number two, to find out what all podcasts I am doing. Currently, me and Sarah Carradine are still bringing True Crime Tuesdays to RHAP over on the Crime Scene podcast, where we cover and review true crime documentaries and docuseries to let you know if you should watch them. So definitely, definitely, definitely go subscribe to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed to subscribe there, because we are all over the Discovery Plus app reviewing different types of ID Discovery shows. This week, we're actually dropping the Death by Fame coverage. Death by Fame is on ID Discovery. It can be found on the Discovery Go app about famous murders in Hollywood. And so we talk about this week with the date with Dateline Girls. It's a great, 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 great episode. You don't want to miss it. It comes out tomorrow. So definitely go subscribe there. And finally, I am over on Twitch, twitch.tv/MariTalksTooMuch, two like the number two, and YouTube, Mari Talks Too Much, all over the place. Every Wednesday, I stream a Dredge. Dredge is a horror fishing game that I play every noon on Wednesday. I set it up now so my heart rate monitor, like a heart rate, is on the screen while I play this. It is hilarious. So you can join us there, or you can just catch the VODs. And me and Matt Scott, we just did we did the first part of the RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. Like, we did a tier list. We were inspired by Mr. Puya here to do a tier list of all of the lip syncs in All-Stars Drag Race history. So we couldn't get through them all. So part one is up at Twitch if you want to go see us rank all of the lip syncs from RuPaul's Drag Race All-Star seasons. It's so fun. And we're going to do a part two, I think sometime this week, maybe Tuesday. So just go check me out over on twitch.tv/MariTalksTooMuch. Ooh, that's it.
Hey, yeah. Thank you as always, Mari. Can't wait to talk to you about Before the 90 Day when we get there in about a month. So we'll see when that happens. Y'all can find me on Twitter at Puya Izzy. You can find me on Twitch, of course, twitch.tv/Puya. I do make other content there. So come through, say hi. I would appreciate it. As far as podcasts go, there's a busy week upcoming for me. Obviously, Masked Singer. We are at the semifinals this week, going to the finals the following week. So that's about to come to a close. But Liana and I have been having a good time talking about that. Also, I will be the guest on Big Deck Energy, the Below Deck podcast, with Sasha this week in lieu of Rob, who is going to be in Toronto. And with Rob and Taryn both being in Toronto, I will be taking over the role of host for the Big Brother recaps over on Tuesday and Wednesday, talking about this season, which is coming to an end on Thursday. So we're really at the tail end of the seasons for a lot of these shows now. But I'll be there to talk about those two episodes there. And I am the guest on this week's Survivor Feedback Show, talking about Survivor 44. I've been having a good time with this season. Can't wait to chop it up with Rob and see what he and I get up to on the Feedback Show. So you can find me over there as well. And of course, last but not least, if you would be able to leave a rating and review for this podcast, it would be very much appreciated. That allows people to find our show. It also gives me some good, much needed feedback on what your thoughts are on this podcast. And as always, your 5-star reviews are very much appreciated. But for now, we've arrived at our destination here on the Osmic Express. We hope you had fun with us. We'll be catching you next week to talk about the finale and part one of the tell-all. But until then, take care. Have a good one. Bye.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.